There is a part of me, a guilty part, a part that I always blame, and a part that always thinks it's at fault. A part of me that finds comfort in my sense of failure whenever things don't work out like I planned. For instance, getting out of bed every morning. You would think that after all this time, I would have it down to a T, a ritual perfected around the moment. But no. I rise to the bait as well as the day, quickly succumbing to the nagging doubt. Why can't I remember my dreams? Is this the onset of Alzheimer's? Am I losing everything along with the memory of my own imagination? There must be more to life than this. Is it worth the pain, the endless suffering? And the day goes downhill from there in an avalanche of self-pity. Because just as most people sleep for a third of their lives, and some watch television for a sixth, while others spend half their life in the bathroom, I, for my part, spend most of my waking life considering myself to be to blame for everything. For instance, for just being, which you would think I would have gotten used to by now. But it has made me realize how this being human thing works. I am the embodiment of a major personality fault. In fact, I've come to think of this mild psychosis, this invisible nervous twitch, this inner discomfort as being more of what makes me me than me itself. So this week, with one eye on how everyone else makes it look so easy, having trawled through the lifestyles of the rich and famous in the pursuit of happiness, Unspoken Words, the series that reflects on a single word and what a single word can inspire, is unbuttoning its collar and wandering off in search of the inner demon of doubt that gives us our personality. Personally, I've come to the conclusion that the only way I can logically prove the world around me is real is to keep muttering to myself the philosophical mantra, "It's my fault. Therefore, I am. I blame me for money, for the lack of it, to be precise, for not spending it more wisely on the odd occasion that its presence is felt in my back pocket, for not taking care of the pennies so the pounds can take care of themselves, for spending it on food, for wanting food. Yeah, sure, everyone wants food, but you should be careful what you wish for, balloon boy. Oh, ever since I gave up smoking, it's like I decided to take up eating as a full-time professional. I mean, if I was a football supporter, you'd spot me right away in the terraces. I'd be the one waggling my Teletubby man breasts around to show how much I support whatever team of six-packed, jock-strapped millionaires it is I'm supposed to live my life for just because everybody else does. I mean, don't get me wrong. You have to do something with your life. It's really only now and again that I find time to reflect on how I car crashed that dream of being a filthy rich, ball-dribbling free-kick specialist, putting $100,000 in the bank every week, yeah, and cheating on everyone from Ulrika Johnson to Cheryl Cole. But no, all that ambition has melted away over time, revealing the waking nightmare that is thinking you should be like that, and you should be better at this. You should be further ahead than you are. You should be doing something different. And let's face it, when you feel like that, you're not happy with yourself. Even though in many ways you have what you wished for. You chose life, after all, and it has been spread out before you like a proverbial banquet. Even so, this nagging doubt still creeps in. And like I said, you have to be careful what you wish for, because there is always an evil genie waiting out there for you to come along with a badly worded wish. Like, for instance, I want to be rich. Yes, master, your wish is a my command. Upon which you might wake up the next morning only to find your name has been mysteriously changed to Mr. Rich. And before you know it, your debit card has been swallowed up by the cash dispenser. And it's Sunday. And after 2 hours waiting on the end of the phone, in a queue your bank likes to call its helpline,
"Your call is so important to us, but hey, we've got lives too, you know, so keep your shirt on. Beep."
So you have to wait till Monday to go down there in person. Yeah, to the bank. I mean, there's a thing. Haven't been to the actual bank for 3 years. And now, for the first time, you notice your branch has been replaced by a charity shop. So you go all the way back to your bedsit to find there's this hulking great genie in the room who thinks the whole thing about wanting to be rich but only being called Mr. Rich is massively funny. I guess for a genie it's hard to maintain a proportional sense of humor. I mean, it must be hard to see the funny side of things after being trapped in a bottle the size of a dill pickle for 10,000 years. Anyway, the damn genie is following you around and sniggering to itself. So in desperation, you pick up the last bank statement you had through the post and head straight back out again, leaving the genie sniggering away to itself. Slam! Until finally, somewhere in town, you find a branch of your bank on the high street that is still open. And you walk in. You demand to know what is going on with your account, handing over your statement to the clerk, only to realize, as you read your own bank statement upside down, that it says your name is indeed Mr. Rich, and Mr. Rich seems to have overstretched himself slightly. In fact, the bank has sold the debt on as if you were the national economy of Greece. And as you make your way back to your hovel, you can hear hee-hee-hee-hee-hee-heeing like a machine gun, and you walk in, only to find the fat genie is rolling around like a schizoid mud wrestler, struggling with his spiritual inner self in a no-holds-barred cage fight scene from Rocky XII all over your polyester indoor-outdoor. Anyway, finally, when the genie calms down and winces at the carpet burns he's managed to inflict on his elbows,
kiss it better.
You seize the moment and say in your best side-mouth whisper,
Genie, what the f... is going on?
And the genie replies,
"Why, I have made you a rich master, as you asked."
Yeah, all right, genie. I didn't mean... Look, what am I supposed to have, a lawyer for this or something? I mean, how could you do this to me? I released you from the bottle, remember? What did I ever do to you? And the genie says,
"Yeah, so sue me. Where's your sense of humor, wish boy? Hey, lighten up, will ya? Killjoy? Who put the hair in your soup all of a sudden? I told you got 3 wishes. It's up to you to ask them. I just do what it says on the tin. I mean bottle."
And in the heat of the moment, without thinking, I say, "I don't want to be Mr. Rich anymore, okay?" And thankfully, the next day, I'm back to normal. Square one. Or so I thought. But no, actually, now I find that I'm not anybody. I'm not Mr. Rich, I'm not Mr. Mud, I'm not even me, not faulty old me, no person, no personality, I'm nada. I have nothing in my wallet, no money, no cards, no ID, no me, in fact, which wouldn't be all bad if that meant that I wasn't still full of the me that thinks it's all my fault anyway. The major personality failing that began to grow and develop inside me from about the age of 10, this weed, this canker, this devil's spawn, if you will, which has now grown and developed way past full term, hollowing out my insides as if I was some kind of sheltered housing project, a kind of Rosemary's Baby exorcist kind of alien in my personal space. No one can hear me scream! Anyway, besides having to worry about what I wish for, I've got this inner secure, doubt-riddled idiot inside me. I might be a psychopath or something. Oh my God, you know, that's probably what everybody thinks about me. So I'm acting like Freddy out of Nightmare on Elm Street on the one hand, and Dorothy out of The Wizard of Oz saying, "Oh God, there's no place like home, there's no place like home," which is kind of clinical, right? I mean, sectionable, at least. If not, it's like I'm the Wolverine coming to terms with his sexuality or something.
Why, you little... Oh my God, Toto, no! Annie Ann, what have I done?
So, I empathize with Signore Weaver in that episode of Aliens where she realizes she's pregnant with the monster. Oh my God, is it the 17th? It can't be the 17th. That God damn it, that means I missed my... Yeah, give me some more of the pickles and ice cream. Oh, I think I'm going to be sick. Oh, what the...
Man, that kid is ugly.
Okay, I'll be honest. I've no idea what it's like to be Signore Weaver, let alone a woman, and realize you've missed your period. Or to have a period, in fact. I mean, I guess maybe it's like giving birth to a monster every month. I don't know. I've never asked. And I guess that's my fault. But by this time, The genie is out of the bottle again and getting bored, sitting around, watching me mutter to myself about what it must be like to be a woman. So the genie gives me a big bear hug as if we just won the World Cup and says, "So, my little Mansky, what's your last and final wish, eh?" Right. So now there's the thing. I tried to get rich, but everyone just called me rich. I decided I didn't want to be rich, and I ended up a nobody with nothing. So, right, just like in the story of the musical of the play of the book of the movie where the bad guy turns out to be your dad.
The force is strong in this one.
Or the one where wizards learn how to control the world through privatized education. Harry, Harry, we're going to be late for class. That could be a modus operandi description of me. Or it could be a description of a coalition government, a condemned pact of a not very well-hung parliament with a two-headed monster of a raving loony party dealing with everything from my personal emergencies to healthcare. In short, it may not be the sort of mix that will work over the long term. But something had to change. And my very personal first-past-the-bedpost system of representation is something I cobbled together in my teenage years as a way of coping with awkward shyness and being the boy next door who was unable to bring themselves to ask the girl next door out on a date, largely because I thought, she thought, with some justification, that the boy next door, moi, was nothing more than a complete wanking idiot who was more spots than human. Anyway, be careful who you vote for. It's no different than being careful what you wish for. Meanwhile, there's this weird giant djinn of a genie waiting to hear what my final wish is before it sets off on its own free world tour of mass destruction. Did I mention that bit about how the genie is actually an evil djinn who only promised three wishes to anyone who rubbed its bottle?
Yeah, that's a rubbin'. Oh, yeah, that's the way to pop my cork or my screw top thingy that is
out. It popped, this giant genie that has been trapped in there for millions of years, since the dawn of time and so on. So it's very impatient to hear your third and final wish, so it can get on with ruling the world. Like the Tory party, sort of. And you think to yourself for the first time, you know, how the hell did this fat genie ever fit in that stupid little bottle? That is the worst kind of overcrowding imaginable. And the thought of it takes you out of your shell for a moment. Because it actually looks like genie has a worst case housing crisis scenario than you do. And for once, your thoughts are not so much as full of self-doubt as a kind of completely unjustified sense of sarcastic superiority. You say to the genie, "I bet you don't really live in that stupid bottle. This is just some kind of sick genie joke, isn't it?" And the genie, who is no genius, says, "Hey, come on, man, you saw me come out of it." Actually, I only ever saw a rather dramatic over-the-top cloud of fake smoke. And for all my faults, I have to say that my powers of observation aren't all that bad because I practice a lot in front of the mirror. Anyway, I just don't see how a big guy like you can fit into a rusty little bottle, let alone fit through that tiny little neck. "Okay, smart guy," says the genie. "Look, I'm gonna prove it to you. Then you're gonna be so sorry that you doubted my powers. Because for the rest of all eternity, I will bore you with the story of how I came to be an evil genie in the first place." And I say, "I might as well tell you right now, you're not going to fit back in that bottle, fat boy. You probably just came in through the back door this morning when I left it open for the cat." "Oh, yeah," says the genie. "Yeah," says me. "Oh, yeah," says the genie. "Yeah," says me. "Why, you little, don't believe me, huh? I'll show you what a real djinn can do. Deal or no deal, buddy. Just watch this, Mr. Nobody, with all your pathetic little psycho-wobbly personality disorders." And with that, a smug wink and a twitch of his nose, he twisted himself back into the little bottle and looked back up the spout with that "I told you so" smirk on his face, just as I screwed the lid back on and trapped him inside for another million years or so. Because I may have my faults, heaven knows, plenty of them, but the genie had taught me a lesson that I should have known all along. It's better to be a freewheeling Mr. Nobody than to be a somebody rich in name only. And that's it from me, screwed down in the ever-shrinking housing bubble of my own self-reflecting imagination. My personality has always lived here, although rarely happily, and has never quite been able to bring itself to unpack the boxes and settle in. Maybe it's time I just sat back, relaxed, and open a bottle to celebrate. My name is Mac Dunlop. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.